went to turn on the news. The story lineup was repetitively familiar. She felt like she could recite along with the anchorwoman word for word. Arnie hadn't already watched three rounds today. He settled into the couch. Alex rinsed the plates and handed them to Daniel to load. One of the dogs whined through the screen door, probably Lola. Alex hoped she hadn't spoiled them too much this afternoon. She'd never thought she was a dog person, but she realized she was going to miss the warm and friendly inclusion of the pack. Maybe someday, if Kevin was somehow still alive and well and the plan was operable after all, she might get herself a dog. If all the happy thoughts were real, maybe Kevin would even sell her Lola. It probably wasn't a practical... A low, fast thud interrupted her thoughts. It was a sound that didn't belong. Even as her eyes were moving toward Daniel, looking for a dropped utensil or a slammed cupboard that would explain the noise, her mind was leaping ahead. Before her body had realigned with her brain, a huge bang cry erupted from the porch, along with a vicious growling. Another thud, quieter beside the hullabaloo of the dogs, and the bang broke off into a shocked and pained yelp. She tackled Daniel to the ground while he was still turning toward the door. He outweighed her by a lot, but he was off balance and went down easy. "Shh!" she hissed fiercely in his ear. Then she crawled over him to the edge of the island and peered around. She couldn't see Arnie. She looked at the screen door. A small, round hole was torn through the center of the top panel. She tried to listen over the sound of the dogs and the TV, but she couldn't hear any sound from where Arnie should be. It had to be a distance shot, or the dogs would have seen it coming. "Arnie!" she hoarsely whisper-shouted. There was no response. She slithered to the dining room table, where her backpack was propped against the leg of the chair she'd used. She ripped her PPK out of its Ziploc bag, then slid it across the floor to Daniel. She needed both hands. Daniel snagged the gun when it was halfway to the island and leaned around the edge. He hadn't practiced with a handgun, but at this distance, that wouldn't matter terribly much. She shoved her rings on and flung the belt around her waist. Daniel was on his feet in a fraction of a second, bracing his elbows on top of the counter. He didn't look at all conflicted about his ability to fire. She scuttled to the nearby wall where the dining room jutted out from the great room. As she moved, she saw a hand shoving the handle down. But it wasn't a hand. It was a black furry paw. So Kevin had chosen not to go with the standard round doorknob for more reasons than aesthetics. She breathed again as Einstein burst into the room, Khan and the Rottweiler close on his heels. She could hear Lola panting pained cries outside, and her teeth ground together. While the dogs congregated silently around Daniel, forming a furry shield, she got her fighting shoes on and shoved the garrote wire into one pocket, the wooden handles into the other. "Give the command," she whispered to Daniel. The shooter would be running in now, though he would have to be on the lookout for the dogs. If he had the option, he'd switch the distance rifle for something that made bigger holes. Dogs like these would keep coming through a lot of hurt. "Escape protocol?" Daniel whispered uncertainly. Einstein's ears quivered. He gave a quiet cough of a bark, then trotted to the far end of the kitchen and whined. "Follow him," Alex instructed Daniel. She darted across the space between the wall and the island, keeping herself in a low crouch. Daniel started to straighten, but before she could say anything, Einstein hurtled over and caught Daniel's hand in his mouth. He yanked Daniel back to the ground. "Keep low," she translated in a whisper. Einstein led them toward the laundry room, as Alex had expected, with Khan and the Rottweiler bringing up the rear. As she ducked from the great room to the darkened hallway, she tried to see Arnie. She could see only one hand at first, unmoving, but then she spied splatter against the far wall. It was obvious that there was brain matter mixed in with the blood. So there was no point in trying to drag him with them. It was too late for Arnie. And the shooter was obviously a marksman. The good news just kept coming. Alex was surprised when Einstein stopped short of the laundry room and pawed at a closet in the hall. Daniel pulled the door open, and Einstein jumped past him and tugged at something inside. Alex crept closer, just as a weighty pile of fur fell out on top of her.
"What is this?" Daniel breathed in her ear.
She felt her way through the pile.
"I think it's a fur coat, but there's something else. It's too heavy."
She ran her hands quickly over the coat. Along the sleeves, there was something stiff and rectangular under the fur. She stuck her hand inside the sleeve, trying to understand what she was examining. Finally, her fingers made sense of it. She wasn't sure she would have put it together if she hadn't recently cut Kevin out of a bat suit. Einstein pulled another dense bulk of fur down on them.
"They're lined in Kevlar," she whispered.
"We should put them on."
Alex struggled into hers as she worked through it in her head. The Kevlar made sense, but why the cumbersome fur? Had Kevin trained the dogs during cold weather? Was this just preparation for the elements? Did it even get that cold here? But as she yanked up the arms, too long, of course, to free her hands, she saw how Daniel's coat was blending into Einstein's fur so that she couldn't see where one stopped and the other began. Camouflage. The coat even had a Kevlar-lined hood, which she pulled over her head. Now she and Daniel were just two more furry shapes in the darkness. Einstein went directly through the doggy door at the far end of the laundry room, and Daniel went right after. She could feel Khan's heat close behind her. She got through the door and saw Einstein pulling Daniel back down as he tried to rise into a crouch.
"Crawl," she explained.
It was frustratingly slow. The coat got heavier and hotter with every foot she gained, and the gravel was like knife points under her palms and knees. Once they got into the stubbly grass, it was a little less painful, but she was so impatient with the pace that she barely noticed. She worried, as Einstein led them toward the outbuilding, where the dogs lived, that he was trying to take them to the truck that she'd instructed Arnie to move. But the truck wasn't such a great escape. The shooter might be holding his position, just waiting for someone to try to drive out on the only road. Or this could be a new variation, where the shooter had friends to sweep the house and flush his victims out while he waited. She could hear the restive dogs penned in the outbuilding ahead, none of them happy with what was happening. They'd made it 3/4 of the way when another sharp thud kicked a cloud of dirt into her face. Einstein barked sharply, and Alex heard one of the dogs behind her thunder off from their little pack, growling in a low bass. The heavy sound of his paws combined with his compact stride made her sure it must be the Rottweiler. Another thud, farther out, but the growling didn't change tempo. She heard something, maybe a muffled curse, and then a hail of bullets rattled out from what was most definitely not a sniper rifle. Her muscles tensed, even as she crawled as quickly as she could in Daniel's wake, waiting for the inevitable sound of the Rottweiler's yelps. The sound didn't come, but the growling vanished. Tears pricked her eyes. Khan moved into position at her side, the shooter's side, and she saw Einstein was providing the same protection to Daniel. Kevin had said the dogs would give their lives for Daniel, and they were proving it. It would probably irk Kevin to know they were doing the same for her. Kevin. Well, the odds were now better that he was alive. The news broadcasts hadn't cut off because the agency had found Kevin, but because they'd successfully located Daniel. They made the outbuilding. She crawled gratefully into the obscuring dark. The dogs inside were whining and barking anxiously. Fighting the heavy mass of the lined coat, she struggled to her feet, still bent over but able to move faster. Daniel copied her, keeping an eye on Einstein to see if he would insist they get back down. Einstein wasn't paying attention to Daniel at the moment, though. Both he and Khan were doing a stuttering race down the line of kennels, stopping at each door and then bounding to the next. At first, she wasn't sure if she was supposed to run too, but then she realized what they were doing. The closest kennels swung open, then the following set. Kevin had taught his prize pupils how to open the kennels from the outside. The freed dogs were immediately silent. The first pair was a matched set of standard German shepherds. The two dogs raced out the barn door, heading north. Before they were out of sight, three Rottweilers sprinted past her toward the south. A lone Doberman followed, then another quartet of German shepherds, each group heading in a different direction. The dogs started flooding out of the building so quickly that she lost count entirely. Easily more than 30 animals, though some of them were still very young. Part of her wanted to cheer, "Tear 'em up, boys," while the other part wanted to tell them, "Be careful." She saw Lola's pups run past, and her eyes teared again. In the dark night, someone shouted in panic. Gunfire, then screaming. A tight, mirthless smile stretched her lips. But it wasn't entirely good news. She heard shots from another direction. Definitely multiple attackers. "Gun?" she whispered to Daniel. He nodded and pulled it out from the waist of his jeans. He offered it to her. She shook her head. She just wanted to know he hadn't dropped it. She was dripping sweat inside the thick fur. She pushed back the hood and wiped her forearm across her forehead.
"What now?" he murmured. "Are we supposed to wait here?"
She was just about to say that as an escape, this didn't quite answer, when Einstein was back, tugging Daniel down again. She got on her hands and knees and followed as Einstein led them out the door they'd come in. Khan was still there, bringing up the rear again. This time, Einstein led them due north, though she didn't know of any additional structure that way. It was probably going to be a long crawl, she realized, and her hands were already deeply scratched from the dry stalks of grass. She tried to protect her palms with the cuffs of the coat's sleeves, but that part wasn't lined, so it only helped a little. At least there were too many furry shapes in the night for a shooter to bother with four that weren't attacking. She looked back toward the house in the distance. She didn't see any new lights on. They hadn't started clearing the house yet. The dog sounds continued, far away growling, the baying of Lola's pups, and random staccato barks. She lost track of time, only aware of the amount of sweat she was producing, the rasping sound of her panting, the fact that they'd been going slightly uphill the whole way, and now Daniel was slowing some, and that her palms were being pierced again and again, despite the coat. But she didn't think they'd gone very far when Daniel gasped quietly and stopped. She crawled up beside him. It was the fence. They'd reached the northern boundary of the ranch. She looked for Einstein, wondering what they were supposed to do next, and then she realized that Einstein was already on the other side. He looked at her, then pointed his nose down to the bottom edge of the fence. She felt her way along the place he indicated and found that the earth dropped away from the line of chain link. What she'd thought was a shadow was actually a narrow gorge of dark rock. The space was easily big enough for her to slip through. She felt Daniel grab her ankle, using her for guidance. After they were both through, she turned to watch Khan struggle his way into the gorge. She winced, knowing the bottom edge of the chain link must be gouging into his skin. He didn't make any audible complaint. They came out on top of a shallow, rocky ravine. It had been invisible from the house, hidden in the lee of the slight rise of land. She'd never guessed that there was any end to the flat plains stretching north toward Oklahoma. Einstein was already scrambling down the rocks. It looked like he might be on a faint, narrow path. Khan nudged her from behind.
"Let's go," she whispered.
She lifted herself into a low crouch, and when Einstein didn't object, started carefully down the slope. She could feel Daniel following closely. There did appear to be a path, though it could have been a game trail, too. There was a new sound in the darkness, a gentle whooshing that it took her a few seconds to place. She hadn't realized the river came so close to the house. It was only about 15 feet to the bottom of the ravine, and when they reached it, Alex felt it was safe to straighten up. The water coursed quietly past them in the dark. She thought she could make out the far side. The river was much narrower here than it was by the barn. Einstein was yanking at something under a ledge, a place where the water had cut away the bank, leaving an overhanging shelf of stone. She went to help and was thrilled to see that it was a small rowboat. She thought she understood the protocol now. "I will never say another bad word about your brother," she muttered rashly as she helped tow the boat from its hiding place. If Kevin was still alive, and if she and Daniel lived through the night, she would no doubt break that promise. But for now, she was filled with gratitude. Daniel caught the other side of the boat and pushed. They had it in the water in seconds, the eddies swirling around their calves. Her coat trailed so much lower to the ground than his that the bottom edge was already in the river. The fur soaked up the water, getting heavier with each step. The current ran faster than the smooth surface implied, and they had their hands full hanging onto the boat while the dogs jumped in. Khan's weight lowered the stern of the boat dangerously close to the rippling water, so they both piled into the prow next to Einstein. First Alex, while Daniel held the boat, and then he leapt in next to her. The boat took off like an arrow shot from a bow. She threw off the hot, heavy coat. She'd never be able to swim in it if that became necessary. Daniel followed suit quickly, whether because he'd thought of the same danger or just because he trusted her to do the right thing. The strong current pushed them swiftly westward. Alex had to assume that this was part of the plan, as Kevin hadn't left any oars. About 10 minutes later, the water began to slow as it widened out around a broad bend. Her eyes had adjusted enough for her to make out what she thought was the far edge of the water. The current was pushing them toward the south bank, the same bank they'd started off from. Einstein was anxious in the prow, his ears pointed sharply upward, his muscles stretched taut. She wasn't sure what he was watching for, but when they'd passed some invisible boundary, he suddenly launched from the boat and into the water. It was deep enough that he had to swim, but she couldn't guess how far beneath his churning legs the bottom lay. He looked back at them and yelped. Realizing it was probably a good idea to get out before Khan did, Alex jumped just a second later. The cool water closed briefly over her head before she surged back to the surface. She heard two splashes behind her. First, a small one, then a huge one that sent a wave rolling over her head again. Khan swam past her, the water foaming white around his legs, and found his footing just a second before her toes scuffed against the sandy bottom. She turned to see Daniel fighting with the current as he tried to drag the wooden boat toward the bank. She knew she couldn't help him if she was in too deep, so she waded downriver and met him when he reached the shallows. She grabbed the prow, and he pulled from the middle, his hand wrapped around the bench. It didn't take long to get to the shore, where the dogs were shaking themselves off. They lugged the boat 10 feet out of the water, then Daniel dropped it and looked at his hands. She did the same. The rough wood hadn't been kind to her already torn palms. They were bleeding freely now, drops of red trickling from the tips of her fingers. Daniel wiped his right hand against his jeans, leaving a bloody streak, then reached back into the boat and retrieved the gun and something smaller, a phone. It must have been Kevin's. Daniel had had the good sense to keep both out of the water. Impressive, given the shock and pressure they were both under. Luckily, everything non-waterproof in her backpack was carefully ziplocked. She examined his face quickly. He didn't look like he was going to break down, but there might not be much warning. Daniel grabbed the coats and held them awkwardly bundled in both arms. She was about to tell him to leave them, but then she realized that there was going to be a murder investigation in the near future. Better to hide what evidence they could. "Put them in the river. The boat, too," she whispered. "We don't want anyone to find either." Without hesitation, he hurried back to the edge of the water and dropped the coats into the current. Heavy as they were, it didn't take long for them to saturate and disappear under the surface. Alex started shoving the boat, and Daniel joined her, pulling it downhill. In seconds, it was racing off across the dark water. She knew it was marked with their blood and prints, but hopefully it would travel far enough tonight that no one would connect it with Kevin's house in the morning. The boat looked old and weathered, certainly not valuable. Perhaps the people who found it would consider it trash and treat it accordingly. Alex imagined Kevin and Einstein on the red water in the daylight, running the route for practice. They must have tried it many times. Kevin would probably be upset about her losing his boat, regardless of the value. She and Daniel turned back toward land together. The barn was easy to see, the only tall shape in the flat darkness. As they ran toward it, a solid square being suddenly reared up. Alex startled, expecting the dogs to react. Then her eyes made sense of the shape. It was one of the firing range haystacks. She took a deep breath to settle herself and ran on. They reached the barn and then raced around to the front doors. Daniel's longer legs got him there first, and he already had the lock free when she caught up to him. He yanked the door out of the way, waited for her and the dogs to get inside, then shut it behind them. It was pitch black.
"Give me a sec," Daniel whispered.
She could barely hear his movement over the sound of her own heartbeat and the panting of the dogs. There was a tinny creak, and then a quiet metallic groan. A faint green light glowed to her right. She could just make out Daniel's shape. His hand lit up as he touched a glowing keypad. Suddenly, brighter white light burst through a long line beside him. As he yanked the crevice open and more light flooded the space, she saw what he was doing. He was at one of the old cars on blocks. He'd opened the fake battery, entered his birthday code, and the false engine had opened. It was the stash of rifles, illuminated from the inside.
"Put some of those in the Humvee," she whispered to Daniel.
The low volume was probably unnecessary, but she couldn't make herself speak louder. The light was enough to brighten a space about 15 feet around him in every direction. The two dogs stood by the door, facing out as if expecting intruders, waiting and panting. Alex sprinted to her duffels and threw off the old tarp. She unzipped the side of the bottom bag and grabbed a pair of latex gloves. She pulled them over her bleeding hands. She took a second pair and stuffed them halfway into her front jeans pocket. When she turned, Daniel had already moved on to the hollow tractor tire. He had two rifles slung over his back, and cradled in his arm were two Glocks and the shotgun she'd been wishing for. As she watched, he reached for the Sig Sauer he'd seen her practice with. He might be new to her world, but his instincts seemed up to the task. It took her two trips to get her bags into the vehicle hidden behind the hay bales. On the first trip, she gave Daniel the gloves as they passed each other. He put them on without asking for an explanation. She was happy to see the Humvee's interior lights had been disengaged. After her stuff was in, she loaded the grenades, but chose to leave the rocket launchers behind. She wasn't sure she could figure out how to use them without blowing herself up.
"The cash?"
Daniel asked when she passed him.
"Yes, all of it."
He moved quickly in response, and for one crazy second, she had a sense of deja vu. They worked well together, just like doing dishes. There was a supply of Kevlar. She put a vest on and tightened the straps as far as they would go, but it still hung a little loose. It wasn't unbearably heavy, so she guessed it had ceramic plates. She pulled another for Daniel. There were a couple of Batman wetsuits, but they were too big for her and would probably take too long for Daniel to struggle into. She smiled when she found two thick baseball caps. She'd heard about these, but thought only the Secret Service used them. She stuck one on her head and took the other to Daniel along with the vest. He put both on silently, his face determined and pale. She wondered how long he could hold it together. Hopefully, the natural adrenaline would last until they got out of this. She strapped a long, thin blade to her thigh, wrapped a holster belt under her usual leather utility, then slung another over her shoulders. She went to the back of the Humvee. She took one of the Glocks and put it on her right hip. She put the SIG under one arm and her PPK under the other. Then she holstered the sawed-off shotgun on her left hip.
"Ammo?"
He nodded. He'd left his favorite rifle slung over one shoulder. She jerked her chin toward it.
"Keep that on you, and take a handgun, too."
He picked up the other Glock and gripped it in his gloved hand.
"We need to wipe down everything you touched."
Before she was finished speaking, he was in motion. He grabbed the tarp that had hidden her bags and tore off two long strips. He threw her one and went out to the lock, Einstein shadowing him. She started on the first car he'd opened. It didn't take them long to get everything. There was blood on the pieces of tarp, so she stuffed them into the back of the Humvee too. She stopped to listen for a moment. Nothing but four nervous animals breathing.
"Where do we go now?"
Daniel asked. His voice was strained and more inflectionless than usual, but he sounded in control.
"Your place up north?"
She knew her expression was hard, and possibly frightening, as she told him, "Not yet." Chapter 18.
"You're going back," he said in a hollow whisper.
She nodded.
"Do you think Arnie might still be?"
"No, he's dead." Daniel's body swayed ever so slightly in reaction to the cold certainty of her words.
"Then shouldn't we be running? You told me if they come for us, we run."
He was right, and it was also her nature to run. She wondered if this was the feeling those mothers had, the ones you read about in the news who lifted the minivan off their child. Desperate, terrified, but also as powerful as a superhero. Alex had her way of doing things. Plan, 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 for every possibility, and then when disaster hit, execute the plan that was the best fit. She did not do spur of the moment. She did not do instinct. She did not do fight. She did flight. But she didn't just have herself to protect tonight. She had a minivan to lift. There was no plan, only instinct. Her instinct was that a serious attack was happening, a well-coordinated one organized by people who had more intel than they should have. She and Daniel could run, but who knew what else the hunters had set up? There could be another trap. If she could find out who they were and what they knew, her escape with Daniel had a much better chance of success. Finding things out was her specialty, after all. Attacking was not. But that just meant it would not be expected. Hell, she was more than a little surprised herself. The hunters didn't know about the Batcave, or they would have been waiting for her here. They didn't know about the resources she had access to. If she thought this through at all, she would probably change her mind. But she was high on her own adrenaline now, and trying to make the smart choices. Not just the ones that would save them tonight, but that would save them tomorrow and the next day. She couldn't make the right choices if she didn't have the right information. "Running would probably be safest in the short term," she answered.
"Then?"
"I haven't had this chance before, to interrogate one of the assassins sent for me. The more I know about who they are, the safer we'll be in the future." A second passed.
"You're not leaving me behind," he stated evenly.
"No, I need your help, but only on one condition." He nodded. "You have to do exactly what I say. I don't care if you like it or not."
"I can do that."
"You have to stay in the car." His head jerked back just a little, then his lips tightened. "Exactly what I say," she repeated. He nodded again, not pleased. She was not convinced he meant it. "I'll need you to cover me," she explained. "And the Humvee is the best place for that. You can't watch my back if someone shoots you."
"Okay.
This is going to get ugly. Can you handle that?"
"I've handled ugly."
"Not like this." She paused for a second. "My best guess is that these guys think they're here for Kevin and you. There's a chance I'm already dead as far as the people who matter are concerned. That means I have to do things differently than I usually would. I can do only those things that Kevin could do. It's going to be old school, and we won't be able to leave any survivors." He swallowed, but nodded once more. "All right. Take the night vision goggles. You're driving." She truly wished he didn't have to see what was coming, to see her the way she was going to have to be, but there was no help for it now. As they drove carefully through the barn door, the dogs silent in the back of the Humvee, except for some heavy breathing, she could feel herself changing, getting ready. It was going to be both ugly and very, very messy. That was, if they didn't get her first. She pulled a small syringe from a bag in her pack. Her last, but then, if she didn't use it now, she might not live to need it another night.
Do you trust me? She asked him.
Yes.
The way he said it gave unusual weight to the simple affirmative. I've got only this one dose left, so we're going to have to share a needle, like junkies. My blood's clean, I promise. She stabbed herself in the leg and depressed the plunger a little less than halfway. Daniel was bigger than she was.
What is it?
He asked nervously. She'd forgotten. He didn't like needles. A synthesis of dextroamphetamine and an opioid, kind of like adrenaline and painkillers. It will help you keep going if you get shot.
Anywhere but the head or heart, she didn't add.
He nodded, and then very carefully kept his eyes forward as she stabbed him through his jeans and into his thigh. He didn't wince. She pushed the rest of the solution into his body. It was enough to last for 30 minutes at most. How well can you see?
Surprisingly well.
Can we go faster? He stepped on the gas as his answer. When you're in place, she instructed, get in the back seat and crack open these little side windows. Shoot anything human that isn't me. I shouldn't be hard to pick out. I'll be a lot smaller than anyone else you'll see. His lips tightened again. You stay in here no matter what, you got that? He nodded. Are you going to have a problem shooting these people?
No.
He said it forcefully, then clenched his teeth. Good. Anything goes wrong, your gun jams, someone gets into the Humvee somehow, whatever, you throw a grenade out the window. That's the signal that you need help. Do you know how to use a grenade?
What's your signal?
Huh?
If you need my help, what's your signal?
My signal is stay in the car, Daniel. The grenade?
I think so, he grumbled.
This might take a little while, so don't get antsy. I won't start an interrogation until I have everything secured. Oh, pull the goggles off before you throw a grenade, or close your eyes. Look out for flares, they'll blind you.
Got it.
Suddenly, a phone rang. Daniel jumped a foot, hitting his head on the low ceiling. The hell? Alex shouted.
It's Kevin's phone, Daniel said,
patting his vest frantically with his right hand. He dug the phone out of a snap pocket meant for ammo. She took it from him as he fumbled with it. An unfamiliar number glowed on the display. She jabbed the answer button.
Danny!
Kevin barked in her ear. Rotten timing, Beach. He'll call you back.
Put him on, you!
She hung up and powered the phone off. Stay focused. You can call him back when we're finished.
No problem.
Well, Kevin was alive. She supposed that was good news. Except someone was going to have to tell him his retirement arrangements were gone, and his friend was dead.
What are you going to do? Daniel asked. Tell me the plan so I know what to watch for.
You're going to ram through the gate if they closed it. That will get their attention. We'll tweak the plan if there are more than four waiting. You accelerate up to the house, then turn right so that your side of the vehicle is exposed. Four or less, you slow down. But don't stop. I'll slide out. Hopefully, they'll stay focused on you. Keep going a few yards, then stop driving and start shooting. I'll hit them from the side. You shoot to kill. I will try to get someone down that I can still talk to. I'm hoping that somebody is passed out in my room upstairs, too. I'll take Einstein to keep the other dogs off me. Khan stays with you. If they hole up in the house, I'll get back in and we'll come in through the wall.
I can see the gate. It's open.
Punch it up to the house. He accelerated.
Lights,
he told her in the same moment she saw them. Headlights coming up the road toward them, moving closer fast. Goggles off! New plan. Hit them. Hard. Roll right over them if you can. Brace yourself. Don't lose control of the car. She grabbed the dash with one hand, her seat with the other. Daniel shoved the goggles to his forehead and floored the gas pedal. She wished there was a way to secure the dogs. They were going to feel this. The other car didn't react to their charge until the last second, like maybe its occupants had been watching behind them rather than out front. Or maybe, with the headlights and running lights off and the matte black paint, the Humvee was mostly invisible in the night. It was a mid-size SUV, white. Once he saw them, the driver veered off to her right.
Daniel jerked the wheel right, and the Humvee plowed into the passenger side of the SUV with a deafening shriek of tearing metal and the explosive pop of safety glass crumpling. The dogs flew forward. A shower of metallic clanks and jangles sounded, while Khan's body crashed heavily into the back of both the driver's and the passenger seat. Alex's head whipped forward, but missed the dashboard by inches when the seatbelt yanked her back. The SUV flew a few feet away, tottered on two wheels for a second, then smashed, driver side first, into the ground. The passenger side headlight burst with another explosion of glass. Khan and Einstein whimpered, falling back to the floor.
"Again!" she yelled.
Daniel slammed the front of the Humvee into the undercarriage of the SUV. Metal protested and squealed. The SUV slid across the flat yard like it weighed no more than a cardboard box. She could see they weren't going to be able to roll it. There was nothing to push it against, just the endless grass.
"Cover me!"
She snagged the goggles off his head. "Use the night scope on the rifle. Einstein, come!" Alex didn't wait for a response. She was out of the Humvee before it was totally stopped. Einstein's toenails scrabbled against the back of her wet jeans as he hurried to join her. She had to move fast before the men in the car could recover from the impact, before they could get their automatic weapons back into play. She ran straight for the windshield, Glock held tight in both hands. She was better with the Sig Sauer, but this was going to be extremely close up, and she would probably want to ditch the gun afterward. Everything was incredibly clear through the lenses, bright green with vibrant contrasts. The driver's side headlight was still on, but buried in the ground, so it emitted only a low, hazy glow in the dust they'd churned up. The windshield frame was entirely empty, and she could see two men in the front seats, two deflated airbags from the initial impact hanging across the hood. The driver was a bloody mess, the top of his head pressing tight against the side doorframe, his thick neck bent at an impossible angle. She could see one eye open, staring sightlessly at her. He looked young, early 20s, with ruddy skin, light hair, and the kind of overbuilt anatomy that screamed, "Steroids." He might have been an agent, except the rest of his look was wrong. His hair was about 8 inches long, and there was an ostentatious diamond stud in the one earlobe she could see. She would bet he was hired muscle. He didn't look like he'd been a decision maker. The passenger was moving, his head wobbling confusedly as if he were just coming around. He was older than the other, maybe mid-30s, and swarthy, with a thick 3-day growth on his cheeks, burly through the middle in the way that men who lifted the really heavy weights sometimes were. She'd bet he was a bull on his feet. He was wearing a well-fitting shiny suit that seemed inappropriate for this kind of operation, but rang a few bells for her. Still strapped in his seat, he was right about at her eye level. She approached swiftly and jammed the barrel of her gun into his forehead, glancing down to see what his hands were doing. They were currently empty and limp.
"Are you in charge?" she demanded.
"Huh?"
he moaned.
"Who is your boss?"
"Accident. We've been in an accident, officer,"
he told her, blinking into the dark. His eyes seemed to be moving just slightly out of sync with each other. She modified her approach, pulling the gun back and softening her voice. "Help is coming. I need to know how many of you there are."
Six.
That meant there were four more, possibly heading out toward the sound of the crash right now. At least the dogs were beginning to congregate around her, all of them on silent mode thanks to Einstein's presence. She wondered if they would have remembered her if she were alone. "Sir?" she asked, trying to imagine how a cop would speak to someone in a car accident. "Where are the others?"
"Hitchhikers,"
he said, his rolling eyes starting to move more purposefully.
"The others are hitchhikers. We picked up four men and dropped them off here. Then there were dogs. Crazy dogs attacking us. I thought they were going to chew through the tires."
He was gaining more control, spinning the story carefully. He made a fist, then released it. She raised the gun again and kept her eyes on his hands.
"Were these hitchhikers hurt in the attack?"
"I think so. I think maybe two of them. The others went in the house.
So hopefully there were only two others. But was this guy in charge? The age was right. However, she picked up a few things during her time in Chicago. In an orchestrated hit, usually the guys left in the car were lower on the totem pole. The driver was secondary. The star of the show would be the one the contract was made with. The one with the skills.
I think I need a doctor,
he complained. An ambulance is on the way. The light from the SUV's one surviving headlight was almost entirely blocked by thick grass and settling dirt, but there was enough that his eyes were beginning to adjust. She saw them widen when he abruptly realized there was a gun in his face. He made a grab inside his jacket. She fired a round into his right shoulder. She didn't want to aim for the hand and take the chance of the bullet passing through and into a vital organ. She wasn't done with him yet. He screamed, and his right arm jerked out in a pain spasm, flinging blood across her neck and chin. The gun he'd been reaching for slipped from his fingers, dropped onto his dead companion's face, then bounced out of the car and against her shoe. She knew it wouldn't be his only weapon, so she aimed down and shot him through the palm of his left hand. He howled again and struggled against the seatbelt, as if he were trying to hurl himself through the empty windshield frame at her. Something was wrong with his legs. He couldn't get the purchase he was looking for. The action had roused the dogs, who were all snarling now. Einstein launched himself at the passenger side of the car, which was currently the topside. Bracing his paws against the frame of the missing window, he stretched his neck into the SUV and locked his massive jaws around the man's right shoulder, the one she'd just shot.
"Get it off me! Get it off me!"
the man shrieked in abject terror. She took advantage of his total distraction to grab the gun at her foot. It was a cheap .38, safety off. "Einstein, control," Alex ordered as she straightened. It was the only command she remembered besides escape protocol and at ease, and control seemed closest to what she wanted. Einstein let go of the shoulder, but kept his teeth right in the man's face, slavering spots of bloody saliva onto his skin.
"Who are you?"
the man screamed. "I'm the person who is going to have this animal chew your face off if you don't tell me what I want to know in the next 30 seconds.
Keep it away."
"Who's in charge?"
"Hector. He brought us in."
"Where is he?"
"In the house. He went in and didn't come out. Angel went in after him and didn't come out. The dogs were gonna rip the doors off the car. We bailed."
"Who was on the sniper rifle? Hector?" Einstein snapped his teeth inches from the terrified man's nose.
"Yes, yes."
She'd never thought of using animals in an interrogation, but Einstein was an unexpectedly effective asset. "Hector was going to make the hit?"
"Yes."
"Who was the target?"
"I don't know. We're just supposed to drive and shoot anyone who tried to leave."
"Einstein, get him." It wasn't the best improv. Einstein's eyes cut over to her, clearly confused. It didn't matter to the man in the SUV.
"No, no,"
he screamed.
"I swear, Hector didn't tell us. Those Puerto Rican hitters don't tell outsiders anything."
"How did you find this place?"
"Hector gave us the addresses."
"Plural? More than one?"
"There were three houses on the list. We did the first one earlier. Hector said it was the wrong place."
"What did you do there?"
"Hector went in. 5 minutes later, he came out. Told us to move on to the next."
"That's all you know?"
"Yes! Yes, everything!"
She shot him in the head twice with his own gun. There was a countdown running in her mind. She had no idea how long it had actually taken to release the dogs, float downstream, and load the Humvee. She didn't know when Hector had entered the house or how long it had taken him to get to her room. What she did know was that the pressurized canister of gas she'd left armed there would continue to quietly exude the chemicals it was packed with for about 15 minutes after someone opened the door. Once the contents ran out, she had maybe 30 minutes more, dependent on the size of the person involved, before the quarry was back on his feet. It was going to be close. She jumped into the Humvee, holding the door open so Einstein could climb over her. She threw the goggles back to Daniel, getting only one glimpse of his face, before she was blind again.
All she could see was that his expression was tense. Get us to the house. Same plan as before if anyone comes out. Stop far enough back that you can see the sides of the house. Watch for someone coming around.
The dogs will let me know if they see something.
Right, she agreed. The advantages of the pack just kept coming. She removed her PPK and holstered the Glock in its place. She stuck the .38 in her belt, shoved the PPK into the bag at her feet, then dug through that bag, pulling the things she needed by feel. She switched the bulletproof hat for the gas mask, quickly tightened it into place over her mouth and nose, screwed in the filter, then grabbed two more pressurized canisters, zip ties, thin tactical gloves, and her earring box. She stowed them in the pockets of her vest. She extracted the heavy bolt cutters last and stuck them through the belt by the empty holster. One handle inside, one out. Though the cutters were compact for their abilities, the handles still reached nearly to her knee. They would impede her movement a little, but if things went the way she wanted, she would need them. She didn't have time to think about what Daniel might be processing right now, how he might feel about her killing a helpless man. The house came into view, all the visible windows downstairs lit. The windows upstairs were blacked out too well for her to be able to tell if the lights were on or not. Do you see anyone?
A body, over there.
Daniel pointed toward the outbuilding. We need to make sure he's dead. There were still three men unaccounted for. The fewer still breathing, the better her chances.
I'm pretty sure he is. It looks like he's in more than one piece.
His voice sounded a little hollow. Hers didn't. Good. She couldn't see anyone near the house. They weren't dumb enough to run out and see what was going on, apparently. No silhouettes appeared in the windows. Surely they would have shut off the lights if they were going to shoot from one of them. Maybe upstairs. The windows were so completely covered that she couldn't even tell exactly where they were. Or the blackout treatments had been pulled back, and someone was watching from a darkened room. Can you see the upstairs windows?
They all look covered, Daniel told her.
Okay, start slowing. 2 seconds after we're out, stop and get ready to shoot. He nodded.
Got it.
Einstein, come here.
Get ready.
Daniel angled the car so that his side was facing into the lights of the house. She hoped she would be invisible on the dark side of the vehicle. She opened the door and slid down toward the slowly moving grass below. She tried to recreate the move she'd seen in 100 movies. She fell to her knees, then rolled onto her side as Einstein leaped over her. She was sure she'd done it wrong, but she wouldn't know how wrong until the survive wore off. She'd forgotten to tell Daniel to close the door and lock everything down, but it was common sense, and he seemed to be thinking quickly tonight. Maybe it was genetics again. He was wired for this kind of situation, just like his brother. Anyway, if someone tried to get into the car, Khan would be waiting. She could imagine what it would feel like if someone who'd already been harried by dozens of attack dogs came face to face with Khan on higher ground in the dark. There was no way this wouldn't affect his aim and reaction time. Even though she had gloves on, crawling across the gravel would have been excruciating if she hadn't drugged herself up. As she hurried away from the Humvee, she heard the rush of her pack's paws approaching in the dry brush. Not just Einstein, but the dozens of other survivors. She'd never had backup like this before. A sniper above would have trouble separating her from the mass. She moved into a crouch next to the porch. The Humvee was stopped now. She heard the door slam. A low whimper, quite near her head, made her freeze. The quiet whine happened again. It wasn't a human sound. She heaved herself up onto the porch, rolled under the banister, and then stayed down, lower than the windows. Lola was there, curled up in the far corner. Alex knew that even injured, Lola would sound the alarm if someone else were close by. She crawled to the dog, her gloved hands slipping against a trail of blood. Lola raised her head half an inch, and her tail lifted for one limp wag.
It's going to be okay, Lola. I'm coming right back. You hold on, all right?
She caressed the dog's ears once, and Lola panted softly. Einstein waited in the shadows by the door. Alex crawled to him.
Stay with Lola, Einstein.
She couldn't interpret the look he gave her. Hopefully he understood. She had to go in alone this time. If she got through this night alive, she was going to track down a gas mask made for dogs. Alex crouched beside the door and carefully inserted her earrings. They were out of place, delicate and fussy, next to the rest of her serious gear. But she didn't have time to be worried about appearances, and this could very well get physical. She grabbed the bigger canister from the front pocket of her vest, twisted the top off, pulled the door open, and threw it inside. There was no reaction, no shout or sound of footsteps retreating as the gas filled the room. She waited 2 seconds, then half stood and ran crouched through the doorway with the Glock in her right hand and the shotgun in her left. She would be clumsy with her left hand, but you didn't need good aim with a gun like this, not in close quarters. She didn't bother searching the first floor. If someone tried to come after her in the next 5 minutes and he didn't have a gas mask, he'd be down quick. She played it out in her head as she moved to the stairs. Hector had come inside, searching for Daniel or Kevin or both of them. Because he'd come in alone, she suspected he'd been looking for only 2 people. With Arnie down, he'd think it was one-on-one. Still, he must have been very confident in his abilities to go in solo. He would have had to check all the rooms downstairs. Then he would have tried the doors upstairs. She was halfway up the steps now. The mist spilling from the canister below was heavy. It wasn't climbing with her. Looking up, she could see that Daniel's door was open, as was the bathroom's. Light spilled down from the far right. That could only be her storage room. She holstered the shotgun, crept to the top, put her elbows on the first step down, and leaned around the edge of the banister. A man was down, in the hallway, dressed in rugged black pants and combat boots. His head and shoulders rested on another set of legs coming out of her room, these in similar pants, but wearing black sneakers rather than boots. Hector would be the one on the floor in her room, if the man in the suit had described events correctly. He would have opened the door, flipped on the light, and dropped. After a few minutes, Angel would have come looking to see if he needed help, seen his legs, and slid along the wall with gun in hand until the gas overpowered him. She had no idea how long they'd been down. So far, the man in the suit had been pretty honest with her. It made her feel safe enough to holster the Glock and get started. First, she took the gun she found in the first man's hands and tossed it over the railing to the floor below. There was another gun tucked into the back of his pants. That went over the railing, too. She didn't have time for a better search. She wished she could inject him with something that would keep him quiet, but unlike the gas, which would disappear from his system in the next half hour, the longer-term sedation would linger in his bloodstream and be a dead giveaway to anyone who suspected she might be here. She zip-tied his hands behind his back and then zip-tied his ankles together. Hector was smaller than Angel, who looked similar to the dead blonde in the SUV, except for his coloring. Both Hector and Angel were dark-haired, as she'd expected from the suit guy's description. Hector was no more than medium height and lean, fit, but not in a way that would stand out on the street. He was clean-shaven, and his skin was unmarked, at least the part she could see. He wore a long-sleeved black athletic shirt. Angel had tattoos on 3 of his fingers, and 1 on the side of his neck. Hector was smarter. If you were going to do wet work for a living, it was better to blend in, avoid features that any witness could easily describe to the police sketch artist. A huge suppressed magnum lay inches from Hector's right hand. The sniper rifle was holstered across his back. She pulled the magazine from the rifle, took the massive handgun, and carried them back to the hallway to dump them over the stair railing. She heard them thud against the hard wood below. One of them made a metallic chink when it hit the previously discarded weapons. She turned back to secure Hector. The body lying in her storage room was gone. She ripped the shotgun out of its holster and pressed her back against the wall beside the door. There was no sound. He would have to come through the door. When he did, she would shoot him. Even the most experienced assassin would be incapacitated with his legs blown off. When the movement came, it was not through the door. Angel began to writhe, moaning in Spanish. In the split second that Alex was distracted, a shadow peeled off from Angel's body and flew straight at her, knocking the shotgun from her hands and sending them both crashing toward the ground. She braced for the impact, even while wrestling with the hands that were trying to strip the gun from her waist. His hands were stronger than hers, but then the crash came, and with it, the shattering of tiny glass bulbs. She could feel the scalding gas sear her neck, the exposed skin around the base of her mask, and she knew she would probably look sunburned there for a few hours, but her eyes and lungs were protected. Her attacker was not prepared. He choked, his hands flying of their own accord to his throat, his blinded eyes. She whirled, 38 already drawn and shot, aiming for his kneecap. She hit him in the left thigh instead. He crumpled to that side and rolled into Angel, who was thrashing in earnest now, straining to pop the zip ties from his wrists. They were heavy-duty restraints, but he was a strong man. She couldn't handle them both. She was going to have to make a choice, quickly. Angel's head was the closest thing to her. She fired twice into the top of it. He went limp. Hector was gasping and scrubbing at his eyes at the same time as he was trying to roll away from her toward the stairs. She sprinted after him, hugging the wall to avoid his reach. He wasn't in control enough to make a grab for her yet. She pulled the bolt cutters from her waist and clubbed the back of his head. His convulsing jerked to a stop. This was all going to be a wasted effort if she'd killed him, but she had to secure him before she could even check for a pulse. To be safe, she put an additional bullet through his left kneecap, then threw the 38 over the banister to the floor below. It had only one bullet left anyway. She used another zip tie to attach his uninjured right leg to the railing at the ankle and the knee, then his right arm at the wrist and the elbow. He wouldn't be able to do much with his left leg. For lack of a better option, she zip-tied his left hand to Angel's big black boot. Angel's inert form had to weigh 270, at least. It was better than nothing. She touched Hector's wrist, marginally satisfied to locate a steady pulse. He was alive. Whether or not his brain function was preserved, she would have to wait to see. She decided to double the cables just in case. While she was tightening the second tie around Angel's boot, she heard the change in Hector's breathing as he came to. He didn't cry out, though he had to be in tremendous pain. That wasn't a good thing. She'd interrogated other hardened soldiers with good control over their reactions to pain. It took a long time to break them. But those men had loyalty to their companions or their missions. She was confident this was a hit for hire. Hector would owe nothing to the people who'd given him the job. She scooted a few feet away with the Glock gripped tight in her hands, watching to see how well her containment system would perform. It was too dark. She got up and backed toward the bathroom doorway, keeping her eyes on the figure on the ground. She felt behind her until she found the light switch and flipped it on. Hector's face was turned toward her. His dark eyes, although still tearing, were intensely focused. His face showed no evidence of the pain he was in. It was a disconcerting gaze, though his face was in other ways one of the most ordinary she had ever seen. His features were even and nondescript. He wasn't attractive, but he wasn't ugly either. It was the kind of face that would be extremely hard to pick out of a lineup.
"Why haven't you killed me?"
he asked, his voice hoarse from the chemicals. Other than that, his voice was unremarkable. He had no accent at all. He could have been a network news anchor, no hint of where he came from in his inflections.
"I want to know who hired you."
Her voice rasped through the mask, slightly distorted. It sounded a little less human. She hoped that would throw him. He nodded once, as if to himself. She saw minute shifts in his hands as he tested his bonds.
"Why would I tell you anything?"
He didn't say it angrily or as a challenge. He just sounded curious. "Do you have any idea who I am?" He didn't answer, his face neutral. "That's the first reason why you should tell me what you know. Because whoever sent you out here didn't give you the information you needed to be successful. They didn't prepare you for what you were facing. You don't owe them anything."
"I don't owe you anything,"
he pointed out, still in a polite conversational voice. His fingers stretched downward, trying to reach the zip tie. No, you don't. But if you don't talk to me, I'll hurt you. That's the second reason. He weighed that.
And the third reason, if I talk, you'll let me live.
Would you believe me if I promised you that? He sighed. He thought for a moment and then asked,
But how will you know whether to believe what I tell you?
I know most of it. I just want you to fill in a few details.
I'm afraid I can't help you much. I have a manager. He works as the middleman. I never saw the person who paid for this.
Just tell me what your manager told you. He considered that, then twitched his shoulders as if to shrug.
I don't like your offer. I think you could do better.
Then I'll have to persuade you. Chapter 19. He watched with a poker face as she stuck the Glock in her waistband and retrieved the bolt cutters from the floor by Angel's leg. She'd considered bringing the welding iron. Fire could be more painful than almost anything else, and many people had related phobias. But Hector was a professional. She didn't have the time to break him down with pain. His resistance would be too high. What would frighten him more than agony would be losing his physical edge. If he didn't have a trigger finger, he couldn't do his job. She'd start with something less vital to him, but he would be able to see the inevitable coming. If he could survive tonight, he would want to do it with functional hands. So he would have to talk to delay her. Hector's left hand was most convenient. As she fit the metal blades around his pinky finger, he curled the rest into a fist and fought harder against the ties. She kept a tight hold on the handles, knowing what she would be thinking in his position. If he could get control of the cutters, he would have a chance to free himself. Sure enough, he tried to kick out with his left leg, despite the excruciating pain it must have caused him. She dodged the blow, moved a few feet higher, then refit the cutters to the base of his folded finger. These were made for cutting through rebar, and she kept the blades sharp. It didn't take too much muscle on her part to snap the blades together. She watched his reaction. He thrashed against the ties ineffectually. His face turned dark red, and the vessels pulsed in his forehead. He gasped and panted, but he didn't scream. "Sometimes people don't think I'm serious," she told him. "It's good to get that misconception out of the way." Right now, Hector would be thinking about the amount of time that could pass before it was too late to reattach a finger. He could live without a pinky, but he needed his hands, and he must know she wasn't going to stop there. She would emphasize her point. She snagged the warm, bloody finger off the floor and backed to the bathroom, keeping her eyes on him as he writhed in his bonds. Even the best zip ties weren't foolproof. She made sure he was watching as she dropped the finger into the toilet and flushed. Now he knew that she wasn't going to leave him options. Hopefully, it would encourage him to give her what she wanted, quickly. "Hector," she told him, as he stared, gritting his teeth, fighting to control the pain. "Don't be stupid. It's not going to hurt you to tell me what I want to know. It is going to hurt you if you don't. Your trigger fingers are next, then the rest of them. This is what I do, and I can keep it up for as long as I need to. Don't you see? They sent you after the wrong people, Hector. They told you nothing about what you were up against. They just handed you to me. Why protect them?"
"You're going after them next?"
he grunted through his teeth. "Of course." His eyes were full of venom and hatred. She'd seen the look before, but in the past, she'd viewed it from a much better protected position. If he somehow got his hands on her, if their roles were reversed, she would do what she had to in order to die immediately.
"I didn't come for you,"
he spit out unwillingly.
"I was sent for a man. I was given a picture. I was told there would be a second man, but that the second would be easy. The first would be hard. I never saw that one."
"When were you hired?"
"Last night."
"Then you rounded up some extra help and came in today," she guessed. "From where?"
"Miami."
"How did you know where to come?"
They gave me 3 addresses. This was the 2nd try.
I guess I don't need to ask what happened at the first place. His seething fury twisted into a ghoulish smile.
They were old. A man and a woman. They didn't fit the description. But I was paid well. Doesn't hurt to be thorough. And all it cost me was 2 bullets.
She nodded. He could see nothing of her expression behind the gas mask, but she kept her features smooth out of habit. How far away was the other house?
15 minutes south of the little town.
Where did the addresses come from?
No one told me that. I didn't ask.
She hefted the bolt cutters. No guesses?
The other place was nothing like this. I saw nothing in common.
Could be a lie, but it would make more sense for it to be the truth. Why would Karsten or whoever was calling the shots at the agency need to give the hitman more than this location? She puzzled over it for a moment, trying to think of another avenue to explore. Her eyes never left his hands. What kinds of things might link Arnie's home to random others? What similarity would generate a list of otherwise unconnected addresses? With a sinking feeling, she thought of a possibility, one she did not like much. What kind of car was in the driveway of the first place? He seemed surprised by her question.
An old truck.
White?
With a black camper.
Her jaw clenched. So they'd gotten a very good look at Arnie's truck, the one he'd said had 2 perfect matches around town. They must have gotten Daniel on camera, or they wouldn't be so certain of the make and model. Daniel would have had to drive down the main drag, passing the bank. That was probably how they'd done it. Why bother questioning the girl who called in about the missing teacher? Just take the CC camera footage from town and get something solid, then call the DMV. They didn't get everything. If the plates had been clear, that couple across town wouldn't be dead. But they knew Daniel was alive because Kevin wouldn't have made that mistake. Also, even in a grainy black and white video, Daniel didn't look exactly like Kevin, if you knew what to look for. She needed Arnie's truck. She needed it badly. It was inconspicuous. They couldn't exactly roll through town in the Batmobile and escape notice. Where was she going to get another vehicle out here? She took a step back, feeling tired. She'd had a good resting place, but now, the hunt was on again. It didn't even matter that most likely the bad guys thought she was dead, because they knew Daniel was alive. Liability. Hector's right hand was busy. He was scratching at the zip tie with the tips of his fingers, almost dislocating his wrist in the process. It didn't look like he was trying to break it or even get to the locking tab. What was he doing? She reached for the Glock. It would probably be safest to put a round through that hand. A single concussive shot exploded in the silence, much louder than she would have expected it to sound from outside the house. Daniel. Her eyes had darted to the direction of the shot, though she knew better. In the 1/4 of a second it took her to recall them, while simultaneously ripping her Glock from the holster, Hector's fingers found what they were searching for. He extracted a 5-inch serrated blade from the cuff of his sleeve. It sawed across the taut zip tie with a twanging snap. The same motion turned into a cast. She fired into his central mass as the blade flew at her face. She tried to dodge while she kept shooting, ignoring the sudden pressure that wasn't quite pain as it slashed across her jaw. Wasn't pain yet, but would be soon, when the drug wore off. She could feel the heat of the blood coating her neck as she continued firing into Hector's chest until the clip was empty. Hector lay still, his open eyes still pointed in her direction, but no longer focused. Moving in swift, jerky bursts, she wiped down the Glock and threw it over the banister, wiped and holstered the cutters, and retrieved her shotgun from the end of the hall, trying to concentrate on what to do next. She didn't know what was waiting for her outside. As she crept down the stairs, her fingers worked quickly to make sense of the new damage. The assassin's blade had just missed her carotid artery, hitting the bottom corner of her jaw and slicing halfway through her earlobe. The loose piece dangled against her neck. Beautiful. On the ground floor, she spared a second to take one quick look at Arnie. His face was turned to the floor. She could see only what was left of the back of his head. It was obvious that he hadn't suffered, but that was weak comfort. She'd planned to gather evidence on her way out, but she wasn't sure she had time for that now. The dogs were quiet. Did that mean everything was okay? Well, after the volley of shots upstairs, it wasn't like anyone outside was unaware of her presence. She sidled over to the door and crouched beside it. Lower, she thought, than anyone would aim to shoot through the drywall. She reached over and pulled the door open a crack. No one shot at her. "Daniel?" she called loudly. "Alex!" he shouted back. He sounded as relieved as she suddenly felt. "You're okay?" she checked. "Yes. Are you?" "I'm coming out. Don't shoot." She walked through the front door with her hands raised above her head, just in case. Einstein popped off the floor beside Lola and was at her heels. She dropped her arms and jogged toward the Humvee. It was lit only by the lamps shining through the front door and windows, but from this vantage it appeared to be totally unharmed by their intentional accident. Daniel slid out of the front seat. "The shot?" she asked, her voice quieter as she approached. The dogs around the Humvee seemed relaxed enough, but...
"The last man. He must have climbed the side of the house to get away from the dogs. He was trying to edge around to the roof of the porch."
Daniel gestured with the rifle to a dark mass crumpled on the gravel close to the east corner of the house. She pushed the gas mask back on her forehead, carefully moving the straps on the left side over her ear without touching it. She adjusted her trajectory, edging closer to the broken figure. Einstein shadowed her. A large, standard German shepherd was pacing not too far off, seeming uninterested in the body. Einstein suddenly sped up and passed her. He sniffed the body a few times while she cautiously picked her way forward, and then he turned to her with his tail wagging. "Is that the all clear?" she muttered. He kept wagging. She leaned in for a closer look. It didn't take long to see all there was to see. Impressed, she turned and walked back to the Humvee. Daniel was standing beside the open driver's side door, looking unsure what to do. He still didn't appear to be having any kind of shock reaction. "Nice shot," she said. "One bullet, literally right between the eyes. It couldn't have been more perfect."
"I wasn't very far away."
He stepped toward her, closing the distance, and his gloved hands wrapped tightly around the tops of her arms. Then he gasped and spun to the side, wheeling her around so that the light was no longer behind her.
"How much of this blood is yours?"
"Not much," she said. "I'm good."
"Your ear?"
"Yeah, that's not going to help anything, is it? You handy with a needle and thread?" His head jerked back in surprise.